Welcome back to Common Sense Care, Parenting Gender-Confused Children with Truth and Love. The gender industry's so-called affirmative care model is the one-size-fits-all answer for everyone who struggles with their sense of sex and gender identity. But in no other area of medicine, education, or psychology is a one-size-fits-all treatment plan appropriate for every person. We believe that each child is an individual and should be treated with the care that's most appropriate for him or her. So welcome back. I'm Maria Keffler.
And I'm Erin Brewer. And what's our topic for today, Maria?
Well, today we're going to talk about why parents affirm. Why do some parents affirm a child's alternate gender identity claims? Mm-hmm. And some don't, but there are some really particular reasons, some very different reasons why parents would affirm that. And I thought it would be good for us to kind of talk through some of those.
Yeah. And I think that, it's really hard, for those of us who sort of see how dangerous this is to kind of understand where a parent might be coming from. But as we were getting ready to talk about this issue, I remembered coming home from a business trip with a colleague who was sitting with me and just sort of talking casually. And she said, "Yeah, my daughter let me know that they're non-binary." And I said, "Oh, really?" I had never even heard of that before. So I sort of asked her a little bit about it. And she said, "Yeah." And I said, how are you feeling about it? And she said, "Well, I'm really sad because I loved my daughter so much, but I'm just going to embrace who they really are." And I didn't give it a lot of thought. I had no experience in this. So I just sort of let it go. And then maybe a couple of months later, I met this colleague's older daughter and we were talking a little bit and I said, "Well, how do you feel about your sister?" And she just said, "Oh, this is all ridiculous. She's my sister," and just was having none of it. And I thought it was really interesting, the difference between the two. And the woman who I was talking to is actually a professor of psychology at a university. So she's someone who you would think would have some background in this and would have some red flags going off if her daughter came and said, "I'm rejecting my femininity. I'm a they, them. I'm no longer your daughter. I'm your child." But she really went with it. And this is someone who I believe is a loving, kind parent. I just think that she's really bought into this ideology and she's been told by the experts in her field that affirmation is the way to go. And I could tell she was really sad about it. I mean, this was a hard thing for her to sort of let go of her daughter. I have another friend whose daughter has come out as a he, him, and I've tried to sort of broach the topic, but there's a wall there. And I think it's because the mom knows where my stand is on this. But these are parents that, before this transgender issue came up, I would have said we're good, loving, kind parents. I think they still are. I just think that they've been really, we talk about this trans ideology being a cult. And I think that parents are just as susceptible as children to being indoctrinated into it.
Yeah, I spoke with a psychiatrist just yesterday. We were on the phone for about an hour, and the psychiatrist has just realized kind of what's going on, has not been working in this area with young people, but stumbled across a doctor who works with kids and was making these statements, not believing that detransition was really a thing, that, the whole nine yards of it. So the psychiatrist was really, really freaked out and terrified as she started looking around and seeing what's actually happening. And we talked about how I think this psychiatrist graduated from college and the programs maybe 15 years ago. And she said, "This never came up. This wasn't taught in my program. This was never a thing. But now I talk to people who are going through counseling, social work, medical programs, and this is the focus. This is the whole focus of it. And there has been a sea change in what's taught. And I think you're right. It's being very systematically taught and spread as factual when it's really very ideological. And I was thinking, as we were preparing for this episode, I was preparing to teach a psychology class this year through a homeschooling teaching service program. Didn't end up getting enough students for it, darn, because I'd already done like half the prep. But I got an older AP psychology high school textbook because they're cheaper. And by older, I mean like 6 years older. So I got a hold of that, and that's what I was going to teach out of. And as I'm going through it, there's a little bit of gender in there. There's just a little bit, and knowing what I know now, I'm looking at that going, oh, this was the beginning of it. And it might be more like 10 years old rather than 5 or 6 years old. But I bet if I got the latest version of that psychology textbook, I bet it is replete with gender messages, because the teaching and the messaging has changed.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, because I just spoke with Dr. Miriam Grossman this morning about how the DSM, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual used by the American Psychiatric Association, changed between the fourth edition and the fifth edition. In the fourth edition, it was gender identity disorder, which is what I suffered from as a kid. And it, you know, it's considered an actual diagnosis. That was changed when it went to the Diagnostic Manual 5.
And that was in, I think, 2012, 2013.
And the new diagnosis is gender dysphoria. And the sort of the impression is that the child may or may not have anxiety about being born in the wrong body, but that anxiety that they have is not due to their, you know, difficult thinking and difficult feelings, is because of how society is responding to them being transgender. So it's a very different shift. And yeah. She was saying that there was just, you know, huge uproar in the society about this change. And it took a long time to get these approved. And part of the problem is that there's no evidence, you know, there's no basis for these, it's an ideology. It's clearly an ideology. And when you have doctors and psychologists and other healthcare professionals pushing an ideology without any evidence base, that's really, really scary. I think most people think there's no way that would happen. So of course I'm going to do what they tell me to do, because this must be the right thing. Well, recently, I think it was just a couple of days ago, depending on, you know, when this episode airs or when somebody's watching it, Sweden just came out with new guidelines for puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones. And they say in their statement that they realize that there's no evidence to support their use in children, and they're having long-term negative consequences for these kids. And they don't help. They don't, you know, they don't cure gender dysphoria. And so, you know, if a country like Sweden, that has readily accepted this for many years, is starting to realize, wait a minute, we have the UK Kira Bell case, where the judges looked through the evidence and said, you know what, there's not much here. It's really important for people to start questioning that. And again, it's really hard, because you want to believe that your doctors and other healthcare professionals are informed, are using evidence-based medical practices, mm-hmm. and wouldn't just fall into an ideological belief system and push it on children. But that is what's happening.
Yeah. I talk to parents all the time, and I know you do too, who their child suddenly announces this transgender or non-binary identity, and the parent goes and talks to all the experts, talks to the principal, the school counselor, the teachers, the pediatrician, the therapist, if they have one, and they're all saying the same thing. They're all saying affirmation is the only, you know, is the only right path. And when I started hearing this, I started thinking, that makes no sense. That does not make sense to me, because long understood principles of psychology and child development offer ample reasons why a child might have distress about his or her gender, or be troubled about his or her identity. There's all kinds of reasons why that could happen. And so I started really researching when my school district was putting these policies into place. And the school board members and the head of counseling were telling me, oh yeah, this is all based factually. And I'm like, well, give me some of these studies that it's based on. And I think I mentioned in one of our previous episodes, the GLSEN, Gay, Lesbian, Straight Education Network, their model district policy, which is now being pushed into school districts, has three citations, two of which originated with GLSEN. And I start digging into the methodology and I'm like, this is not science. This is not research.
It's a belief system. It's a belief system.
Yeah.
And I think that the fact that they say this is the only approach too, you know, even with kids with who have, you know, significant mental health issues like bipolar disorder or, you know, I'm trying to think of some of the other major, anorexia nervosa, some of these obsessive compulsive disorders, even kids who have these, you know, very significant mental health issues. There isn't one approach. There isn't one way to treat those kids. There isn't just one way to handle it. There are a myriad of different.
It's the same thing even with medical things, even with cancer, you know, with a broken bone, with, you know,
Even I have arthritis. I have arthritis and there are a number of different, I've been to a number of different doctors. I've had different approaches. Some say, you know, do this, this, and this. And I've had some success with some and not so much with others. But there isn't one treatment path. And so to think that there would just be this is the one and only way, and we're going to legislate it. And that's the other thing is that because of the therapy bans that have been enacted, a lot of parents aren't even given an option to handle it a different way. And so there are a lot of times parents come to us and they're just like, it's the first time that they've even sort of allowed themselves to question because they've been so indoctrinated. And you can just see sort of the light bulb go on when they start questioning. And it's this like, whoa, could I have really been misled so much by people who are supposedly loving and caring my child, my doc, my family physician, the therapist, the school people, could they really be doing this damage to my kids? And you can just see it's this like, it's horrible. This sense of betrayal they feel.
And it doesn't take much questioning to start to break down. And we've talked about another episode, so I don't need to go into that, but it doesn't take a lot of questioning. I'm in a parenting group on Facebook for parents who are having concerns and questions. And a lot of parents come into that group and they will preface what they're saying by, we're very new to this and I support my child no matter what. And we love our child and we're gonna let the child lead. And after all these caveats, they'll get down to, I just have this one little question. And in this other group I was in, I really got beat down for asking it. And almost to a person, now there have been a few who have left because they don't like what they hear in our group. But most of them, they start talking to other parents who've been in this a little bit longer. And they start going, I knew this was a problem.
I'm not crazy. Because you can just see they feel like they are just having to go along with this thing that makes absolutely no sense to them. And when they finally realize they're not alone, it's just this huge relief. I mean, it's just incredible. And I don't know how you get to parents who, you know, who aren't willing to question, you know, those who are just like so into the affirmation. I just saw this video. It was a gentleman who was testifying in front of a legislative hearing about, you know, the legislation was to ban these interventions for kids. And he was just, we love you. And, you know, just adamant that like this was the worst thing that could possibly happen, and how could people do this, and this was going to come back and haunt them, and I just thought, you know, it's obvious this man is he cares about these kids, you know, he cares about them, but the fact that we're silent so much that, you know, we're not even allowed to get the information out there is why I think so many parents are affirming, because you're not allowed to question, like, you know, again, in other situations where you have a medical, you know, healthcare concern, imagine, you know, if you had a child who had some kind of cancer, and anytime they started talking about their child's cancer, everybody said, well, you better use chemotherapy. Chemotherapy is the only thing you can use. If you don't use chemotherapy, you're going to be responsible for the death of your child. you know, of course they're going to be like, oh, okay, I better use chemotherapy. even if that may not be what the child needs, even if that's not in the child's best interest.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to swim against the current.
Yes.
And so I see parents who affirm, often vilified by those who don't affirm, like you were saying, that man who's testifying, how can you be so stupid? You know, what's wrong with you? But really, it's very hard to stand up and say no to something everyone else is saying yes to. We saw this on another episode, I think our one about social psychology, where this experiment was performed, where people were shown lines of various lengths. And there was only one person in the experiment who was part of the experiment. Everybody else was in on it. They were Confederates. And everybody else was pointing to the wrong line and saying, that's the longer line. That's the longer line. And I don't remember what percentage. Was it about 50% or more?
I think it might have been a little higher than half. I mean, I think it was the majority of people in that study pointed to they kind of looked around and then they went with the crowd.
Yeah, even though the crowd was obviously wrong. And it is, it's really hard. And especially if you don't have a grounding mm-hmm. in child psychology, if you don't have a background in what to expect or how to really think critically about what's going on, why wouldn't you just do what the experts are telling you?
Exactly. And also, as we hear in that group, if you start to question, you get blasted. And so it takes a strong heart to be willing to risk family, friends, and career in order to go against the flow. And a lot of people don't have, you know, for whatever reason, don't have the constitution to do that. They don't have the, you know, sometimes it's even a matter of they may not have the ability to do it. If they're, you know, a single parent who relies on their community for support, if they are working and they can't afford to lose their job. I mean, people do lose their jobs. People do lose their children for not affirming. And we're seeing it more and more that parents are being reported for child endangerment for not affirming their children. So, you know, it's not surprising that so many parents are affirming with all of these, you know, factors that are just pushing them in that direction. I think what maybe is more surprising is how many parents are saying, wait a minute, we don't agree with this. And I think that's a testament to the instinct of those parents to know something's really wrong here and I need to protect my child.
Yeah. I was just listening today to Sasha Ayad and Stella O'Malley, their podcast, Gender, A Wider Lens. And I was listening to their podcast about autism, and it was so powerful. And they were pointing out, you know, autism in the population is like 1-3% of the population. In the gender nonconform or gender identified, transgender identified crowd, it's like 30-40%. That's enormous.
And especially what's disturbing about that is when you look at the number of boys versus girls who have autism versus the number of girls who are self-identifying as transgender, it's even more shocking because fewer girls are diagnosed with autism. So that 33% is going to actually be much higher for girls. I mean,
that's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, it's really concerning that basically what we're doing is we're saying it's almost like we're stigmatizing these kids with mental health issues and we're pushing them into something that's really almost like eugenics. Like if you go along this path, you will, you know, ultimately be sterilized. And I just sort of feel like there's something really ugly there, that underbelly.
There's something very sinister going on.
Yeah.
And we don't need to go afield. We've talked about this before, you know, about why it is, but there is something very sinister going on here. But there's an issue with parents who affirm that I want to throw in your court, and I want to hear what you have to say about it, because I think you know a lot more about it than I do. But I keep seeing and hearing about Munchausen syndrome.
Yeah. And that's so interesting. For people who don't know what Munchausen syndrome, it's actually Munchausen syndrome by proxy. Munchausen syndrome and Munchausen syndrome by proxy are two different things.
Oh, okay.
But basically Munchausen syndrome or Munchausen syndrome by proxy, it's someone who really thrives off of getting getting attention from the medical profession. So if I had Munchausen, you might even call it, you know, being a hypochondriac, but it's a little bit different because a hypochondriac thinks there's always something wrong. Somebody with Munchausen will make something wrong with themselves in order to get medical attention. And they will even alter tests. You know, they're the ones who maybe might put blood in their urine, you know, to make it look like there's actually something wrong with them to get attention. Munchausen by proxy, the by proxy part is when parents do that to their children. So they actually do things to cause damage to their children to get attention from healthcare profession. And a lot of times the parents, you know, they come across as very loving and concerned parents because they are thriving off of that attention that their child's getting. And we've heard about really horrible cases where parents have, you know, fed their child feces or, you know, done things that are just horrible to get their child sick enough to get that medical attention. And in some cases, it seems like that might be happening with the with kids who are identifying as transgenderism, that the parents are actually pushing very young kids to identify as transgender and telling them that they're transgender in order to get this kind of attention that the Munchausen by proxy parent gets. And oftentimes it's a mother. And so I do think that that is, you know, a concern, especially when you have very young children who are all of a sudden identified as trans and the parent is pushing them to get medicalized as quickly as possible. And I see this in groups where a parent will say, my four-year-old has a transgender identity. Well, actually, that's not what they say. What they say is, I have a four-year-old who's trans. When can I get them on medication? When can I start them on puberty blockers?
I wanted to ask you about that too, because I see that too. And I think puberty blockers are to stop puberty. Your four-year-old is nowhere near puberty. Why are you looking for this?
Right. And that's where I see some red flags that maybe there's something going on here, because it's absurd to think that a four-year-old would need to be medicated. And the other thing that I see is I think that there are parents who are just mortified that their child is gender nonconforming. So you have, you know, parents who maybe have an effeminate boy and they don't like it. They just are find it offensive. And so they just gently push that child into believing that he's born in the wrong body and he's actually a girl. And same with girls, that, you know, there are parents who are unhappy with maybe their daughter's looks or how she's acting and can't accept her. So they'll push her to be.
I have so much trouble understanding that. And I'm glad you brought it up. I can't wrap my head around that. But then I think about, I had a friend who, she's a beautiful woman, but she was apparently the less attractive of her three sisters. And her parents were constantly commenting on her unattractiveness and constantly, and I mean, she's a beautiful woman. So I guess that does happen, but I just can't imagine being that rigid about the way your child needs to look.
Yeah, and I think it's unfortunate, but I think that there are people who are really worried, you know, about having a sissy boy or having, you know, a butch girl, that they have some, you know, preconceived notions about what that means about their child. And it's really unfortunate. And I also think that there are some cultural influences. I know that I talked to Susan Takata, and she's of Japanese descent. And she was the last born of the children, and none of them were boys. And in the Japanese culture, they really want to have a boy, ideally the last child, she said. And so it's not that her parents, you know, completely rejected her, but there were always these messages of, oh, we needed a boy. We wish you had been a boy. We thought you were going to be a boy. You're not a boy. We really wanted a, you know, and this child hears this a lot. And now they're being told you get to choose if you're a boy or girl. It's not surprising that they're coming home from school and saying, you know what? You wanted a boy? I'm a boy, you know, or vice versa.
Wow. Those messages can be so powerful with kids, and even like inadvertent messages. Yeah. I have three kids, and my youngest, she's now 13, but I don't know, maybe 6 or 7 years ago, I wasn't even thinking about what I was saying, but I sort of made an offhand comment that she'd been a surprise. And she was so upset by that, that you mean you didn't want me? You weren't planning for me? And I was like, oh no, honey, we wanted a third child. We just hadn't started actively trying to have you yet. We really didn't want you. But I mean, she was really wounded by that thought that I was an accident. Like, no, 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 you weren't an accident. You were a pleasant surprise. But I think as parents, we can sometimes just throw off these offhand comments and not realize how deeply that's going into our kids.
And the other thing that I think is happening more and more with girls now is mothers and fathers who are concerned about their children, because there is sexual assault and sexual abuse, that they are so concerned about their child being sexualized that that child could internalize the idea that being female is unsafe, and therefore decide that it's just going to be safer to be transgender. It's just going to be safer if I'm a boy. And actually, I remember when I was pregnant for the first time and I had the ultrasound and it showed that I was having a girl, I actually started crying because it brought up, I'm going to cry now. It brought up a lot of feelings for me because I did have a sexual assault and I thought, oh, I don't want to bring a little person into this world and have her experience that. Yeah. And that was my first response to her ultrasound, which is really sad, that I thought my first response is, oh no, I don't want my daughter to ever have that happen. So I think that women who have been traumatized could project that onto their child and their child, you know, as you said, they're sensitive. So it's not that, you know, they're trying to do that, but just that kids pick up on it by the mm-hmm. things we say and do. And so I think that these are parents who are loving and kind generally. You know, of course, there are going to be some Munchausen by proxy parents, and there are going to be some parents who kind of just want to showboat. You know, I don't know what you'd call them, but they're parents who just want to be able to say,
yeah, it's so,
I'm
it's
cool. So I've got a trans kid.
Right. It's so celebratory now. As soon as you say you have a trans kid, everybody applauds. And oh, we, you know, I just want a pony and $1 million because my kid's trans. Yeah. I'm going to get a TV show.
Right. And they, some of these kids do. I was watching Amber Briggle, who's, you know, started transing her poor child when she, you know, she said she knew before the child was even born that she was transgender, which is just absurd. Yeah. But this child got flown to the White House to watch Star Wars with the Obamas and meet some of the cast members. Well, gosh, if you were in school with that child and if you were a parent of a child and you're like, whoa, is that all I have to do?
That action. Right.
So I do think that there are so many different angles to this, but I do think that the vast majority of parents who are affirming are coming at it because they genuinely are concerned about their kids and they want to do what's best. And they're being told by experts, this is what you should do.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think we need to have a lot of compassion for that. There are, I believe, a lot of people who are deceiving, who are actively deceiving people in this milieu, in this area, but it can be very hard to sort out who are the deceivers and who are the deceived. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to have a lot of grace and a lot of compassion for anybody who's going through this and don't automatically assume that you know why they're behaving the way they are. That would be great if it went both ways. If parents who don't affirm, if the ones who do affirm would say, okay, I know you love your child. I know you're trying to do what's best. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, we're just in a state in our country that we're in a lot of animosity and a lot of tribalism, and it's always us versus them.
And I think historically, especially with moms, that's been the case that there's that, you know, at least I don't know if it's always been the case, but just in, you know, since I've been alive, there's always been sort of a tension between, you know, parents. There's, you know, when I was growing up, it was the working moms versus the stay-at-home moms, you know, and there's, you know, I'm sure there's all different variations on it, but there's
oh yeah. When my kids were young, it was the, what's the term for it? Attachment. That's the word.
Yeah.
Attachment parenting versus right. like the discipline, the sleep training parents.
Right.
And yes. if you were a sleep training parent, you clearly didn't love your child. And, you know,
even spanking. I mean, there's, you know, a lot of people who will like be anybody who spanks is abusive. And then there are people who are like, anybody who doesn't spank is spoiling their kids. So there are, you know, there yeah. always been, but I don't think that there's ever been a case where children have been, you know, removed from the home because of these different parenting choices. And that's really concerning that this one parenting choice based on what is in essence, a religious belief system, that this is taking over. And it's really surprising in America where, you know, we fight so hard to separate sort of belief systems from reality. You know, even in our school systems, we're very careful not to teach belief systems. We try to stick to teaching science. And yet in this one case, you know, we have just completely thrown it all out the window. And I was thinking about the Scopes monkey trial, where they were, you know, arguing about whether or not to teach evolution in the schools. And I was thinking, I wonder if we'll have the equivalent of books written about when transgenderism was taught in the school and somebody fighting to get it out of the school, fighting to get science back in the school. You know, it's crazy that we're to a point where we might have to fight to get science back in the schools again.
Yeah, I think, I mean, this can't help but collapse. Yeah. I mean, this is so, it's such a lie. It's so fabricated. It's this manufactured thing, and it cannot help but collapse. And so part of me thinks, well, you know, we just sit back, we take care of our families and just wait until the cards fall. But I just can't. And I know you can't either, because we know, we see in these families, the damage that's being done to kids and families. And when you were talking about kids being removed from their families, you know, it used to be family court wanted to keep families together if at all possible. That was the goal, was family intactness. So there's a situation I know of where a child was molested while in the care of a babysitter. And Child Protective Services was called in, and they came into the parent's home. Now, it wasn't the parents who were accused of molesting, it was the babysitter, but the parents, you know, had left the child with this babysitter. So Child Protective Services came into the home and they interviewed the parents. They looked around the home. The parents had to show, you know, here's our food, you know, here's our refrigerator, here's our kitchen, here's where our child sleeps. CPS looked at the entire picture of the family to see, are these healthy parents? Is this a healthy situation? And of course, it was determined that it was. This was a one-off. The parents had no idea that this was not, it was a family friend anyway. But now, I mean, we are literally talking to parents who have their children removed because somebody calls CPS and says, this family isn't affirming their transgender status. And the child is being removed from the home.
Yeah, it's shocking to me that there are cases where actually a parent is sexually assaulting a child in the home, and Child Protective Services will work to keep that family together, will work to maintain a relationship between the offender and the child. But now we have situations where parents are actually being told, you're not even going to get visitation rights to your child because you're not affirming them. So they're basically saying that not affirming a child is worse than sexually assaulting a child, which is on so many levels just completely wrong and just horrifying. And those parents, I mean, again, is it surprising that so many parents are affirming if you're looking around and seeing what's happening and thinking, I could lose custody of my child if I don't affirm? It is really
hard. It's a real risk. It's a real concern. And it's part of the reason why I tell parents, I don't consider the public school a safe place for your child, not only because the school is teaching this and propagating this, but because if the school gets a bee in its bonnet and doesn't like something that you're doing, they can effectively have your child removed from you.
Yeah, and to me, that just is so horrifying, because we know that kids who are removed from their families have really poor outcomes. And So, you know, even in families that are pretty disruptive, it's better for the child to be there than to be in foster care, because foster care, frankly, is a disaster. Kids are regularly abused and assaulted and put in situations that are really inappropriate. And so, again, this is just a situation where I see the state way overstepping its bounds. And it's just, it makes me so sad, because in all of these cases, it's the kids who are suffering. The kids are the ones who are going to be damaged by this the most. And so I guess the key take-home message is to be compassionate to parents who are affirming, but to also try and maybe nudge them to understand how dangerous this ideology is.
Yeah. We have a clip from Walt Heyer, don't we, talking about this situation?
And he's a really interesting person to listen to, because he medically transitioned quite a while ago. He went through the full, you know, operations. He had facial feminization. He was on the hormones, and he lived as if he were a woman for a couple of years.
I think it was 8 years.
Yeah, being told that this was going to cure all his mental health issues. Well, it didn't. It turned out that it didn't. And, you know, when you hear him talk, it's just heartbreaking, because he went through, you know, all these procedures that just caused a tremendous damage to his body, and it didn't heal him. It didn't cure him of all this. And so he's left having to pick up the pieces from what he did, and then still having to work through the original issues that he had to deal, which was sexual abuse and physical abuse in his family. So this poor guy went through so much, and now he's speaking out, and thankfully he's speaking out. But I can tell you that it's not easy, because I was at a hearing with Walt a couple of years ago in Alabama. And as the hearing ended, somebody threatened to kill him. And so this is what people who speak out have to deal with. I've had similar threats. So again, it's not surprising, but let's listen to what Walt says, because he does have some really important insights.
This word affirmation has probably become, you know, the key word in manufacturing transgender children. And so I see that affirmation is one of the most dangerous words there is. I know in my own case, when grandma affirmed me, I look back at that and say, I was abused. That was genuine abuse. I mean, we're cultivating this. It's totally abhorrent behavior, because what happens, isn't it? The second you tell somebody about, you know, being able to change their gender, what you're really saying is, and stop and think about this for just a moment, is you're saying there's something wrong with who they really are. You have people who are supporting you in your delusional ideology. And one of the problems with cross-gender behaviors is that it's contagious. When I know of several children who report to their parents, well, I just wanted to do it because my friend was doing it. So now we have a social contagion of cross-gender behaviors.
Well, I think that Walt's insights are really important, that when parents affirm their child, they're affirming a delusional belief system. Mm-hmm. And Walt also touched on the social contagion nature of this, and how, you know, unlike Walt and I, who had, you know, what would be considered, you know, gender identity disorder or gender dysphoria, these are kids who have lived perfectly, you know, healthy, happy lives. And then suddenly, you know, a whole group of the kids at school decide they're going to do this. And so, again, this is another instance where, you know, when parents affirm this, they're not only, you know, kind of hurting their own kids, but they're hurting other kids too, because the more this is affirmed, the more it gives the message to other parents, other families, other kids, and the schools that this is the appropriate response. And so I would encourage people to go and watch the whole interview with Walt, because I think he's got some really important insights.
Yeah. I just want to touch on real quick. I don't think we said this today, but that word affirmation, It's such a positive word. It's such a feel good word. Don't we all want affirmation? And why wouldn't we affirm our children? But this is another one of the words that the gender industry is turning inside out. And what we are affirming, and I think Walt said this in his clip, we're affirming that something is wrong with the child. We're saying, yes, there's absolutely something wrong with the way that you were born. Would we ever say that to a child who had muscular dystrophy? Oh, yes, there's absolutely something inherently wrong with you.
so wrong with you that you should completely reject yourself and become somebody else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't, or a child who had a mental handicap, you know, who was slow, would we ever say, yes, you're absolutely, something's inherently wrong with you? Mm-hmm. We should never tell a child something is inherently wrong with your body. We should tell a child, let's figure out why you feel that way and help you to feel better about yourself.
And isn't that true with any mental health issue? That imagine if therapists just sat around affirming their clients that came in. I'm so depressed. Nobody likes me. Oh, yeah, you're right. Nobody would like you. I'm really feeling nervous. I think people are following me. And the therapist says, you know, I think hiding in the closet is exactly what you should be doing.
You're right. People are following you.
Again, we use this example a lot. If we have a rail thin woman come in with anorexia nervosa who says, I want a liposuction, and the doctor says, all right, I'll sign you up. I mean, this is absurd. That's not the goal of therapy. There's no real point in going to therapy if they're going to affirm you. really.
Right. Because why would you need it? Why would you?
Yeah, I mean, the goal is to you know, and the, you know, again, that message that you're inherently flawed, that there's something so fundamentally wrong with you that the only way to fix it is to become somebody else. That's such a scary message to give to a kid. Oh,
and it's so destructive to the child, to the child's family, and as you said, to society at large.
Yeah. Well, do we have any questions from parents?
We do. We have two questions today. The first one. This is from the parent group that I spoke earlier. Somebody asked, is it just me or has the world gone mad?
Yeah, I know. It's funny because when, you know, right before we logged in, I was just having that sense of like, yeah. Oh my gosh, I don't know if there can be anything crazier than this. This just feels so.
You know, we've been saying that for a while. And like every time we say, okay, this is the craziest it can get, somebody goes, hold my beer. And they come out crazier. Wow, I don't know how they topped it, but they just did.
Yeah, I mean, I think the next best thing we're going to hear about is artificial prostates being implanted in women who have gender dysphoria. I mean, I keep thinking, what could be more absurd than what we are doing, like you said. And
well, you just, this is a little bit off topic, but you just posted that thing today about micro invalidation.
Yeah.
Not regressions, but micro invalidations. And I was reading through that. Really, the only thing we're allowed to say is, you trans person are wonderful and perfect and everything you think is exactly right. And I'm a terrible, awful person who should just die. Yeah. That's really all we're allowed to say.
Otherwise you're micro invalidating. Yeah. I just saw that and I'm like, yeah, that's just one of the most absurd things I can think of. So we just have to completely, talk about the Emperor's New Clothes. I mean, we just have to just sit there and talk about how wonderful this is. And it's we laugh, but at the same time, I believe this was at a university that published this. And they said, if professors are using these micro invalidations with trans people, they could potentially lose their job. I mean, this is, again,
it's serious. It really is scary.
Yeah. I mean, I think sometimes we have to laugh at it because otherwise it's just, I mean.
We laugh lest we cry. We've done a lot of crying.
Yeah. So I think, the world has gone a little crazy. But I do feel like we're seeing little bits of hope that I didn't see 6 months ago. Again, that Sweden coming out saying, you know, they're not going to use puberty blockers or cross-sex hormones until 16 is huge. And even though that was
a leader, Sweden's been a leader in this area all along.
Exactly.
And not necessarily a healthy leader, but they've been at the forefront of it.
Yeah, pushing these medical interventions. And I would much rather it say 21 than 16. But boy, 16's a whole lot better than 8. And when I hear about 8-year-olds getting puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones at Johanna Olsen Kennedy's clinic at the LA Children's Hospital, it just about rips my guts out. I mean, I just can't stand at 8 years old. These kids still believe in the tooth fairy and you're going to block their puberty and give them cross-sex hormones. Like, no, this is crazy. So for moms who are feeling and dads and, you know, everybody out there who feels like this is crazy. Yeah. We're going through a crazy time.
Yeah, the psychiatrist that I spoke to yesterday on the phone, I mean, I feel like she really just peaked. And by peak, it means like kind of waking up to this and going, whoa, wait a minute. And she was really in that state of like, how has it gotten here? How is this happening? And I'm encouraged to see more and more people waking up to that, but we really do need more and more people waking up and stepping up and saying no.
Yeah, we sure do.
Well, the other question that we got, why is trans such a thing today? I am in my 50s and in all my life, I've never seen so many saying that they're born the wrong gender. I don't get it at all. How do we know if this is a phase?
Well, I think just the fact that we've seen this like incredible, I was going to say exponential increase, but it's even more than exponential. I mean, this has been
More
an
than that, yeah.
explosion of cases. And so I think that's how we know this is a phase. There's something really wrong going on here. Again, in any other healthcare issue that exploded like this, we would have, congressional panels, we would have inquiries, we would be having investigations, we would, something would be happening.
Well,
But
think
for,
about the virus. Think about the virus. Any virus. That's what a virus does. It grows, it explodes, it spreads. And I know, boy, trans rights activists don't like to hear this referred to as a virus, but it's acting very much like a virus.
It is. It's a social contagion, and we have documented cases of social contagion. This isn't, something that just people are making up. We know this can happen. We know, and usually it's innocuous. Usually it's not a big deal. These trends that happen, but this is very serious. And I can imagine, people who are just starting to like hear about this, the people who have just sort of been living their lives and all of a sudden are like hearing about kids being born in the wrong body must be like, what? When did that start happening?
Right.
We have a gender
Body
soul?
snatchers or yeah.
Where's my gender soul? And how do I know?
Oh my gosh, I've lived all my life and never considered my gender.
Well, and I think that's the big part of it is for most older people, it's not, that this is not even something that is in their vocabulary because they just are a man or are a woman, because that's the biological reality of it. And so the fact that, we have children now who are being encouraged to replace fact with fiction, that's what's so concerning. Because when you start doing that, when you start undermining reality for kids, it sets the stage for really bad stuff to happen. And I hate to make the comparison between what's happening in Nazi Germany, but again, it's that same kind of thing where I think people just sort of are like, oh, that's just their thing. I'm not going to worry about it. I don't want to lose my job. I don't want to lose my friends. I don't want to lose my family. So I'm just going to like not look over there at what's happening, and hope it gets better. But it doesn't get better unless people stand up and say no more.
And we have a whole generation of kids who have been affected by this, whether they have adopted a transgender identity or not. All of the kids in this cohort, all of the kids in this generation have been taught this, and they have experienced this with their cohort, with their friends and their peers. This is a huge problem, and we've talked before. I won't go into it now, but we've talked before about internal versus external locus of control. Who's in charge of your life? Is it you or someone else? This whole generation has been taught, not just with the transgender ideology, but with the critical theory as well, that everything that's wrong with you is somebody else's fault. That does not set us up for having healthy adults in the future. People with an external locus of control who think everything is somebody else's fault, they're terrible friends, they're terrible spouses, they're terrible employees. They are not people that you want to have in your life. And now we have just raised an entire generation of
And they're
them.
not particularly happy people either because
No.
they feel very helpless. I mean, this is a generation of kids who have been taught to be helpless. So, I didn't mean to end on
Right.
such a
I
misery.
know. I don't want to end on that downer. How
Yeah,
can
what are we
we?
talking about next week?
Well, next week, we're going to talk about dual identities and something I call boomeranging. We'll talk about it next week, but it's what you see with kids who have been sucked into this identity, or sucked into this ideology. Cults, break down your own identity and put on you an identity that they want you to have. And so cult members have these dual identities, their real self and their cult self. And when you start working with a child and trying to get them out of the gender cult, you start seeing them do what I call boomeranging. You start having these positive interactions where it looks like they're starting to think about things and starting to like align with the family. And then they like shoot back over into being militant cult members. And we're going to talk a little bit about why that might be happening.
That sounds like an important topic, Maria. Well, thank you so much for this discussion. And again, I think if we just handle this with, you know, conviction and compassion, that's going to be our best approach.
I think that's a great way to end. Conviction and compassion.
Thanks.
Thanks, Erin. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.